one of my friends told me about seeing St. Elmo's fire where all of the nail heads in the shutters were glowing green.
Hi, welcome back to That Doesn't Happen Every Day, a show in which we interview more or less everyday people about things that don't normally happen every day. That is the voice of Samsara Duffy. She works in one of those lookout towers you see on the top of mountains designed to warn people of fires and other dangers. And she's describing how one of her fellow lookouts saw the green plasma build up on the nail heads of the fire tower she was working at as part of the phenomenon called St. Elmo's Fire, which I thought was just a movie, but really does apparently happen during electrical storms. Originally, this episode was going to be about lighthouses, but I found out that most lighthouses in North America especially are automated. The one lighthouse keeper I could find said, "Why don't you do one on lookout towers?" I love that idea because, like lighthouses, fire lookouts are also very isolated. They're high up in the air, and the people who work in them face unusual and different challenges that most of us don't even know anything about. So we're calling this episode The Lighthouses of the Rockies, even though lookout towers are found in other locations. And we're going to talk more to Samsara, Sam, about how she dealt with the isolation and unusual circumstances of being a fire lookout on Patrol Mountain in Montana for 26 seasons. Before we get started, there are two quick caveats. One, I know that the sound is bad. I apologize. We did the best we could with the technology we had, and I believe it will be fixed on future episodes. The second thing, Sam asked us to mention, even though she does work for the Forest Service, the things she shares and says are her views and her opinions, and she's not speaking for them at this time. Sam describes the hike just to get up to her lookout tower.
From the trailhead to the lookout is about 6 miles, and then you cross a creek, and then you have about 3.5 miles of switchbacks where you climb about 2,800 vertical feet. You're walking up a rocky ridge up to the lookout itself. When you get to the lookout, there are 5 steps to get up on the catwalk, and the catwalk is about 3 feet wide all the way around the building. The building is a glass house. We have windows on every side, and when you walk in the door, immediately to the left is a counter and cupboards and a few drawers that hold dishes. And then I have my cook stove, which is a 4-burner propane stove, which includes an oven. Beside that is a wood stove for heat. And then on the south wall of the lookout is my workstation, my table, and my radio is located on that table. And then in the middle of the room, which takes up a fair amount of space, is what's called the Osborne Firefinder. And that looks like a big compass. It's the primary firefinding tool that lookouts use. You line up the eyesight with the crosshairs, point it towards the fire, and that gives you an azimuth heading.
If you'd like to learn more about that Osborne Firefinder, they're actually really cool. You use them to shoot an azimuth, just like you do when you're doing land navigation in the Boy Scouts or in the military. I thought it was really interesting, and I've included a link in the description to a video that actually shows one and how they're used. I asked Sam about her typical day at the site.
My typical day, well, first of all, I almost never use my alarm clock, because the sun comes up and I wake up. And then I check in with our dispatch office. We do scan the area quite frequently, especially after lightning storms. And if we've had a cold front go through, I really watch the drainages where I know people are camping. We don't get a huge number of fire starts from human-caused fires, but occasionally we do end up with human-caused fires. So we actually do get to spend a fair bit of time looking through binoculars, whether at the hillsides, seeing trees, or looking at snowdrifts, or watching birds, or watching animals. We do get to spend a lot of time doing that while we are watching for smoke as well.
I wanted to know what Sam does if she actually does see a fire.
So my responsibility as a fire lookout, when I see a smoke, is I use the firefinder and maps to locate as close as I possibly can where I'm seeing the smoke. So my first call to the dispatch would be, Group Health Dispatch, this is Patrol Lookout with a smoke report. And they'd respond with, Patrol Lookout, this is Great Falls Dispatch, ready to copy. They then will immediately be on the phone with the duty officer, the fire management officer, and the district ranger. Those people are going to make the decisions whether to let the fire do what it's going to do or if they're going to suppress it. Often, they'll call me back and let me know what the plan is. That response can be anything from, okay, it's close to a road. We're sending our engine from Augusta. They'll be there in 45 minutes. We're calling in helicopter repellers, and those guys will actually fly their helicopter to the site and rappel out of the helicopter down to that start along with their gear, and then they'll engage the fire safely and whatever they end up doing. Or they might hike people in. There's a variety of responses depending on where the fire is located, what the weather is, what resources are available. Smoke jumpers, there will be a plane that comes in. See this plane circling and circling and circling. And then they throw paper streamers that are probably about 15 inches wide and 20 feet long. And they use those streamers to identify how much the wind is, how fast the wind is blowing, the direction the wind is blowing. Once all of that is figured out, they exit the plane 3,000 feet above ground level. And it almost looks like flowers blossom in the air. They jump out of the plane, and so what I first see is a little spot that just kind of blooms, and their parachutes are blue and white, red, white, blue, orange and white. Suddenly it's like there's some sort of a flower that shows up in the air and it just kind of drifts down. This year I actually had one fire that I called in that was on our district, and it was the first fire on our district that I'd called in 3 summers. There was one summer I remember turning in something like 12. And the thing folks have to really understand about a lot of this is a lot of lightning starts might be a single tree that burns, and then it goes out and we never see it again. And so while it may sound impressive to say, yeah, I turned in 12 fires one summer, of those 12 fires, the decision was made to put people in on maybe one or two of those fires, and they were kept small, maybe one or two trees, and then they went out and the crews moved on to the next fire. And then evenings are variable. If we get thunderstorms and we're in high fire danger, we stay on the clock and we do get overtime for those thunderstorms. And we watch for lightning strikes, if lightning strikes, and call that into dispatch if necessary.
Since lookout towers tend to be on some of the highest points in an area, and by necessity don't usually have a lot of trees around them, or are built on scaffolds above the trees, I knew that lightning was a concern, but I had no idea how much until I talked to Sam.
So usually by the time you can hear the thunder pretty well, the lightning is close enough that it could reach out and touch you. At my site, I have 5 lightning rods, one on each corner of the roof and one in the middle, that are all connected by stranded copper wire. And then around the top of the roof line, on the outside of the roof line, is a copper wire. And there's an identical one that circles the lookout that's under the porch. And there's wires that run down on each corner. So it forms a network, with the idea being that should lightning strike, it's going to follow the path of least resistance, which is this copper web that's on the outside of the building and won't actually pass down through the building. Inside the building, everything that's metal is tied into the lightning protection system. So there's a grounding wire to the wood stove, to the firefighter, to the propane stove, to the refrigerator. And so we unplug our main radios from the antenna, which acts like a lightning rod as well, so we don't fry our radio system. I leave my handheld on so I can continue to monitor and be able to answer as needed. My bed, and then I have a chair and a stool, are all up on glass insulators, so they don't actually touch the floor during a thunderstorm. So they are, we're completely isolated from any potential electricity passing through the structure. I typically don't leave my chair on the insulators just because I don't get that many storms, and it does beat up the floor pretty badly. But if I'm going to be in a lot of storms, I do have the glass insulators. I can put them on the feet of the chair, and then I sit on that chair and look around. Usually I sit on the bed. The bed, it doesn't move much, so and it's always up on insulators. You can have thunder and lightning associated with snowstorms. And this was the first time I had ever seen a thunder snow, and I really, really, really had to pee. It had been hours that I had been standing on the stool or sitting on the bed, and I went outside. I was still on the steps, and I looked up, and on the lightning rods on the corners that I could see on the front of the building, there were green, basically Christmas balls on the top of each of the lightning rods. And so I turned around and went back inside.
Just to clarify, there weren't actual Christmas lights. What Sam saw when she was vulnerable and out of her lookout was a buildup of that luminous plasma that happens to metal rods and even ships' masts during lightning storms that we talked about before called St. Elmo's Fire. I wondered, when Sam isn't fighting fires or dealing with seemingly supernatural electricity, what she eats at the lookout.
So, I mean, I think that's probably one of the biggest things that people don't think about with being in these lookout sites is just you have to plan your food a lot differently. We use pack strings for just about everything on our district, and each pack animal can carry between, well, usually right around 150 pounds of gear. There are a couple of meals with the batteries, and then there are a couple with groceries. We get our water to the sites in 5-gallon jugs, and so basically each jug weighs about 50 pounds. Depending on the packer and depending on the animals, either horses or mules, there may be one or two jugs per side on an animal. So the things that I do miss that I wish I could get more of up there would be like cucumbers and tomatoes and grapes, cherries, a lot of those soft kind of fruits that don't travel well in a mule pack either. But I bake a lot of bread. Up at the lookout is where I learned how to bake, and so I come down to lower elevations and I have a hard time cooking. I love making banana bread. I make fruit crumbles with canned fruit and oats. I eat a lot of potatoes. They keep really well in those situations. And then when it's cold out, I make a lot of soups. Sitting on top of a mountain, it's hot. I go, oh, I'd really like some ice cream. And you can't get ice cream. First of all, it wouldn't even make it to the trailhead without having thawed. And then it wouldn't make it up the mountain without having thawed. I've kind of gotten over that. I still do really like to get ice cream when I can in town. But I don't miss it at the lookout. Sometime between 2005 and 2008, I don't remember the exact year, we ended up getting propane refrigerators at the lookout sites.
Since Sam mentioned how the pack mules bring water to the site, I had to ask if her lookout was plumbed or if it had an outhouse.
I have an out. I don't have an outhouse because there's no walls. It's a toilet seat that is set on a wooden platform that's over a built-up pit. You have to make sure that you have enough toilet paper pre-ordered or pre-staged up there. I cannot leave my toilet paper outside because the rodents would chew it up. I have a lot of hoary marmots. They're good-sized, like house cat-sized. But one of the things that I really like about it, which some people might find a little gross, is they clean out my out every year. And because of that, I don't have to worry about it filling up and having to dig a new one, which would be a challenge to begin with because it's mostly rock up on top where I am. Long time ago now, a mountain goat came up and he actually moved the lid of the toilet seat and he just moved it. He didn't do any other physical damage to it, but that was kind of an interesting experience. Some of the people who live in or who work in the tall towers, or even some that work on the ground as well, they use chamber pots, and especially at night, if they have to go and don't want to go outside at night, they'll use chamber pots or something, a device similar to that. So you just get really good at running up and down the stairs. Once I came back from a couple days off, the next day when I went down to use the outhouse, or the out, there was a big pile of bear scat right next to the small snowdrift that was still there on the north side of the lookout. The bear had obviously laid in the snow right next to the out. Now, bathing is a little bit more of a challenge. At the lookout, water conservation is definitely an issue because, like I said, all of our water gets packed up. I go through, on average, probably 20 to 25 gallons of water every 2 weeks, which sounds like a lot until you start actually adding up how much water we use daily. And that's for cooking, cleaning, bathing, everything that I need water for. I wash my hair about once a week, sometimes twice a week if it's really sweaty and really sticky. I do use baby wipes for kind of short little spit baths. I do not use my solar shower for a couple of reasons. One is I find them to be really wasteful of water. And the other is if I'm going to use my solar shower, I have to go outside. And there's never not wind. So it just gets kind of chilly when you're wet. Standing naked, wet in the wind. But inside, I have a couple wash basins that are pretty good size. They'll hold probably 3 gallons of water pretty easily. And I'll fill maybe 2 to 2.5 gallons of water in one, heat it up. I'll use that to wash my hair. And then the rinse water from my hair will be my first round of clothes washing.
I asked Sam if she ever gets bored.
I honestly don't remember ever being bored, just because I can always find something to do to occupy my time. I absolutely love listening to audiobooks because I can turn on an audiobook or a podcast and sit there and just look around at the hillsides, look at my vistas. I love that view. Or I can watch the birds, I can watch the butterflies, and read. And then occasionally I'll do crossword puzzles or Sudoku or some sort of a word game like that. And after I'd been up there a couple of years, I learned how to knit. And so I do a lot of knitting up there now because it's something I can immediately drop and answer the radio or do whatever I need to do that's specifically work-related. One summer, I have a hand-crank sewing machine. I actually made a couple of quilt tops. There was a guy he was a music major, and he had 4 or 5 different instruments, and he had an electric keyboard, so he was going to be spending his summer working on his studies for music. Some people take watercolors. I know people who have written novels or nonfiction works while they've been at the lookout. There's a really neat book called The Dragonfly of Lookout Mountain. Can't remember the author's name, but she illustrated that entire book with pointillism drawings while she was there.
Sam said she does get days off and uses them to hike off-site to places where she meets up with her parents to go camping. When she can get reception, she also tries to talk to her husband of 7 years, but because he's a smoke jumper, their opportunities to connect during the summer sometimes require a lot of patience and coordination. This made me wonder if she ever gets lonely, or if other tower workers ever do.
I mean, I know people who, in the past, they've used going to a lookout to really help their mental health, and I've also heard of several, unfortunately, being in that kind of isolation does not help their mental health. For many, many, many years, most of my years up there, I haven't had a reliable cell signal. And so you just figure out how to be comfortable with your own company. And you get to know yourself, and you become very comfortable with yourself. And that's something that I really do not think our society encourages or even values. You have to have friends. You have to go to the bar. You have to go out and do this. You have to go to picnics. You have to go. There always has to be something external that you're involved with. And there's not much, especially in media representations, that value that internal, again, comfort with yourself.
Remember how at the start of the episode I said that most lighthouses are now automated? It made me wonder about the future of lookout towers. I asked Sam why the Forest Service uses people with big compasses on high towers to fight fires instead of something more high-tech.
Human observers know our landscape, and there are so many times that I've seen a single tree start that would not have been picked up by somebody doing a patrol flight in an aircraft. Fires have to be basically a pixel by a pixel, which ends up being about 100 feet by 100 feet on the ground before satellites can pick up that heat signature. Whereas I can pick up a single tree, or I can pick up one fire I called in and they got people on. It was 5 feet by 5 feet when they got in on it. And that's a lot more accurate and a lot more efficient than waiting for the aerial observers or satellites. So there still is a value to having human observers in these locations, and it's something that definitely needs to be looked at a lot more closely than technology.
I wanted to make sure to thank Sam for being on the show today, and I wanted to say thank you for your service and what you've done to help our forests and the people in them for over 25 years. We will have another episode coming at you Monday morning. Please tune in. Thanks.